All around us, the phrase return to the workplace is becoming more of a reality. For many leaders, this moment is an opportunity to not only bring people back, but also to reshape their organizations.
The pandemic did something really interesting. It forced us to have a conversation around the workplace. And so we are now thinking and rethinking, how do we think differently about the workplace of the future?
That's Johnny C. Taylor, Jr., President and Chief Executive Officer of SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Management. With more than 300,000 members in 165 countries, SHRM is the largest HR professional association in the world. It impacts the lives of 115 million workers every day. As a global leader on the future of employment, culture, and leadership, Johnny's a sought-after voice on all matters affecting work, workers, and the workplace. He's frequently asked to testify before Congress on critical workforce issues and authors the weekly USA Today column, Ask HR. Johnny is a member of the White House American Workforce Policy Advisory Board, and he chairs the President's Advisory Board on Historically Black Colleges and Universities. Among his many accolades is being named the 2021 Professional Society CEO of the Year by online magazine CEO Update.
Be clear about who you are, what your company's culture is, and be very honest with people on the front end. Some people, some prospective employee may say, well, I don't like that. Well, then he or she shouldn't work here.
I'm Merrill McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and to gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. And now, Johnny C. Taylor, Jr. Johnny, thanks so much for joining us. It's really fantastic to have you here.
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Merrill. Thank you for having me.
You know, it's really been interesting to watch your work with SHRM for the last 3.5 years, but you didn't start there, did you?
No, I did not start there.
So tell us a little bit about that. So how did your career track really go?
Back in the day, I did my undergraduate work at the University of Miami, went off to Iowa in a law school, and then came back to practice law. I had the unusual opportunity of getting picked up by one of my then prospective clients called Blockbuster to come in-house as a labor and employment lawyer. And that's how I really began to understand HR. I was obviously practicing labor and employment, but so much of my work was reactive. But I could really, really be helpful if the organization, if I could be on the front end of this to prevent some of these disputes. And thus my interest, my real interest in human resources as a professional pursuit.
It's always so interesting to really think about the whole employee experience. And one of the things we've always been interested in is how leaders really design the company you want to become and how you create a really incredible employee experience. And, you know, we've seen such an interesting example of that over this last year with COVID. And I'd be curious really to hear about your thoughts about the future of work, of which, of course, you're quite a thought leader and expert. And then what has COVID changed in your thinking?
Well, so I'm going to first tackle the future of work. And at SHRM, we refer to work, worker, and the workplace. And those are really three distinctly different ideas. Work being, what is work going forward? You know, in the past, it was very clear. You're an employee if you work 37 and a half hours or more. Fast forward, is work now being done by people other than the traditional employee? Is the Uber driver, who technically is not an employee, though still doing work? Well, of course he or she is. So just the new definition of work and who is doing it. And related to that is, what is a worker? If you think about the Fair Labor Standards Act, which set up the definition of an employee, that was the 1930s. And so fast forward, a lot has changed and we've not kept up with it. So the future of work and what a worker is something we've been rambling toward trying to sort out. Well, the pandemic did something really interesting. It forced us to have a conversation around the workplace, right? So historically, it was a perk or an accommodation to work from home. And now we were able to challenge that notion that work had to be done at a workplace, a defined static workplace. And so we are now thinking and rethinking, how do we think differently about the workplace of the future? 2 years ago, there was this all the talk about open air workplaces and taking down cubicle walls, and we would have people, right? Because all of a sudden COVID comes and you're like, that was a bad idea. Maybe we do want people to control contagions. You wanted separation and people can concentrate. So there's just a lot that has gone on as a result of COVID. And one other thing that I have to, you know, bring in is more than just that, but the laws around work, the policies around the workplace. So we've always said there's the Family and Medical Leave Act, but the problem is it's unpaid. A person historically could wake up in the morning not feeling well, and technically they could call their employer and say, I'm not coming. But the employer would say, I'm not going to pay you. And because most people can't afford not to be paid, they drag themselves into work. Well, we now had to revisit this whole notion of unpaid leave. It was actually to our advantage as an employer to pay you to stay home if you were sick. All of these things are what the pandemic has done and forced us to rethink work, worker in the workplace.
Right. We're seeing a lot of our clients as they're going to a more hybrid workspace, you know, and we've been working with them on policies and procedures. And I would imagine SHRM has incredible resources on this.
What concerns me is that we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves in making these decisions. So as opposed to companies stopping first and saying, who are we? What do we want to be? What is our culture? How do things get done around here? They are instead saying, let's decide what our new policies and procedures are going to be before asking those seminal questions. So I think at its core, as I talk with business leaders and other HR leaders, I often say, you've got to spend some time deciding, what do you want to be? You talk about vision. What's your vision for the employment experience here? And here's the deal. No one's right and no one's wrong. As long as they have been very clear about why they have decided this is the work experience, the employment experience we want to provide.
I'm curious because a lot of statistics are getting quoted around a high number of leaders wanting people back to work, but a very large number of employees not wanting to go back.
There's no question that on balance employees, now there are, when you break it down, the demographic, older workers versus younger workers, generational differences, gender differences, employees would prefer on balance work remotely. Employees would also prefer a lot of things that businesses aren't going to allow.
Like what? Like, let's hear that.
Like, I want to make more money. I want to make unlimited money. I want to not have a supervisor. I'd like a flat organization. I want to, instead of paying into a pension plan or a 401k plan, I'd like you to pull all that money and pay off my student loans. Businesses have to listen to their employees and hear their perspective, but you don't always have to make the decision that is most popular, because you've got to take into consideration as a leader your various stakeholders, external stakeholders, the stock market, the investors, and it's not simply what do the employees say they want. So now back to the question that you posed. So employees are saying, no, here's the deal. And I've advised a lot of CEOs, Fortune 100 companies, be clear about who you are, what your company's culture is, what your vision is for the workplace, and you'll be attractive to some people, and others you won't. And those employees will have to decide, do they want to work here or not? So the most important thing for you to do is be very clear, communicate it, be thoughtful, decide what you are, and be very honest with people on the front end. Some people, some prospective employee may say, well, I don't like that. Well, then he or she shouldn't work here.
You know, what we're really talking about here is a whole employee value proposition, right?
Yes.
In your view, what are the most critical elements of a company to consider as they're crafting one?
Number one is culture and a true articulation of your culture, not the culture that you aspire to be, right? There's something to be said for, we hope to one day be this way, but a true articulation of what it means to work in this place. That's number one. When you think about an employee value proposition, if you can't get that right, then you're going to have a really hard time getting and keeping the best employees because you sold them on X and you delivered Y from an experience standpoint. So that's number one. Number two is about culture. But the second thing is really communicating this and communicating and over-communicating and reminding employees, this is who we are. You have got to remind people, these are our values, our guiding principles, this is our culture, and you've got to remind them consistently and you've got to live them. That's the big deal. Employees have said, and all of our research tells us, employees want certainty more than anything. And that's where this whole concept of trust comes in. When you ask an employee, do you trust management? What you're really saying is, do you trust management to be who they say they are? That's all.
What else would you include in the employee value proposition? Or how do you see them in terms of weighting? For example, comp and benefits or the kind of work we do.
So comp and benefits, it's in the top three. The reality is people need to feel like they're being paid fairly. And so comp and benefits table stake. And you've got to once again be clear about your culture. Are you an organization that says, I want to pay top of market? That's my brand. When I go work at X company, Goldman Sachs, we pay top salary because this is what we want out of you. By the way, there's a trade-off. Companies have to be real clear about their compensation and their benefits strategy. And that's where a lot of organizations fail. And so from an employee value proposition standpoint, there's a question mark, right? There are companies who decide I'm going to pay more base salary and put less at risk. So they have a smaller bonus pool. Some don't have bonus pools at all. We're going to pay you what we should pay you, period. Nothing's at risk. Others say, I actually want people who have some skin in the game. So you know what? I'm going to pay you at the 50th percentile of the market, but I'm going to have a bonus that could take you to 150% of market when we perform as an organization. Again, these are all conversations and discussions that have to occur within management, not just go out and put together a comp plan, but ask your question why. And one thing that I alluded to earlier, it's really important, like Generation Z and millennials, because of the student loan debt that they've taken on, that you did a survey and said, what do you want? What do you value more? A pension plan, 401k match, or student loan payoff? You know what the answer is going to be. Now, companies have to decide, but how attractive does that make me to a 50-year-old? Not as attractive, right? And you need this diverse workforce, multi-generational workforce. How do you manage all of that and make sure that everyone gets what they want? So comp and benefits goes a long way toward this broader discussion around employee value proposition. What we know is that people will go work at a nonprofit. This is my second one around purpose and fulfillment. People will go work at a nonprofit at a fraction of what they could make in industry. People are now increasingly saying, but I also want to work for an organization that has a mission, a purpose, and that gives me fulfillment in my work. That's a big deal now, especially with the millennials and Generation Z. So all of those things in the mix, along with being clear about what your culture is, are a part of the employee value proposition.
Thank you for that. And, you know, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about the fact that as we talk about being clear on who you are and having a vision, how does a leader actually go from that to actually transforming people's experiences? What steps do you really recommend people take?
So funny, I've fancied myself a little bit of an expert in that because I joined here at SHRM and 70-year-old organization when I got here. And that means revisit our culture. Like many organizations, there is a plaque on the wall or a statement in the handbook or now online that says, these are our guiding principles. These are our values. What people really want to know is, what's your purpose? Like, why do you exist? And how do I play a role in it? And so that was the first thing that we did and something I recommend. You have got to get down with your senior management team. So it's not just the CEO, the executive team. And you can define that as your direct reports or layer down, which is the direct reports plus one. But sit in a room, go away and say, who are we? What are we? What do we want to be? What is the work environment, the work milieu that we want to create? And that is the first step, is getting a lot of clarity. And once you do that and articulate it and reduce it to writing, then you've got to go out, step number two, and test it with your employees. Does it resonate? You go take it to your employee population and they say, eh, not so much. And so there's a little bit of a back and forth in stage one and stage two to ensure that this is the right spot. After you've done that, the third step is to put together a really, really comprehensive communication plan. One that involves all sorts of things. Actually sitting down with employees, telling them, making clear this is who we're going to be, and basically getting commitment. A commitment on your side as senior management that this is who we are. This certainty that you want as an employer, you can, as an employee, you can hold us accountable. People don't judge you by what you say. They judge you by what you do. Your employees are going to watch to see. If you say we're an organization that values diversity and inclusion and diverse perspectives, then guess what? You've got to do that. So what happens when an employee says, I feel I'm a Trump supporter. And another employee says, well, wait a minute, that's ridiculous. I'm not a Trump supporter. Your employees are going to watch you to say, do you really? Or is this just lip service? Are you authentically delivering on the employee value proposition? That's where the rubber will meet the road.
Let's take that example of diversity, for example, and play that out a little bit. So in the environment, how do we live it? When there is friction, what is leadership's role in that?
The leader has to say, A, we expect there to be friction, right? I tell people all the time, diversity is easy. Inclusion is difficult, right? Taking a diverse population of people and putting them in the room and making everyone get along is really hard work, and making sure that every one of them feels safe. And safety isn't a one-way concept, it's a every-way concept, right? So the number one thing that we really emphasize on Take a Diversity is, you've got to mean diversity. You've got to show diversity, true diverse thought, perspective, race, gender, in addition to everything. And employees are watching you to see if you mean what you say. Employees say, if you tell me you value diversity, then I better see that. Or otherwise, you've not delivered on the employee value proposition. You've breached the social contract.
So, Jenny, from your standpoint, what are the biggest trends that are going to reshape our workplace?
So, it's like, name them, right? There are 100 of them, right? So, number one is remote work. And we've talked about that. How and where people will work. I think where we've ended up is hybrid. The number one trend is, I don't know that we will abandon the five-day work week, but the five-day in the office work week is quickly going the way of the past. So the hybrid will depend on the organization, but that is absolutely one of the biggest trends that we are seeing. Secondly, is this trend around the need for employees to feel fulfilled and want that fulfillment in their work, the need for employees to work for purpose, to be clear about their purpose and the mission of the organization and their role in that. A third trend, though, and it's kind of related to it, is we're seeing a lot of employee activism, and we're wrestling with that as leaders. In times past, collective behavior in the form of unions were really the way that employees really showed you their concern. Now, one or two employees will go online and create the message and the narrative and say what they think about their employer. And then the final one, there are a whole bunch, but diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is not just George Floyd, although the George Floyd murder was a moment, racial reckoning, but I saw over 20 years, I've seen us migrate. First, it was diversity 20 years ago. And then 10 years ago, we added inclusion. And then about 3-4 years ago, we really started talking about equity, particularly gender pay equity and now racial pay equity. And so this DE&I, that's not going away. And it's partly because of the demographics of our country. When you look at the K through 12 public school systems in America, they're majority minority. So your future workforce is going to be more diverse. And as a result, you've got to focus on inclusion and equity if you plan to have workplace peace with your employees. So those are the big trends that we're seeing.
Where does justice fit in the DE&I calculation?
So that's, oh gosh, you're talking a hornet's nest, right? CEOs are trying to figure out that.
Right. Okay. Many of my clients are. That's right. Why I'm asking.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Because in the past, what we would say, and I'm going to use George Floyd as an example. Even I, and I'm an African-American man, right? May 25th was George Floyd's killing, right? So I thought that's a social justice issue. That is a law enforcement issue. I have a diverse workforce. I am promoting diverse people. We have an inclusive environment. Well, 2-3 weeks into it, it crossed. It actually began to show up at work. And I'll be honest, for a while, it was like, that's not it. I'm focused on HR. I'm focused on elevating HR, our purpose. Well, employees pushed back and said, no, we actually demand that you have a point of view and that I want to work for a place that has a point of view. Well, let me tell you, Meryl, then companies ran out and began stepping up and having a point of view. But here we are seeing companies be dragged into the Georgia new voting law issue. And CEOs have a fatigue now because they're like, I don't know how to make everyone happy. I think you're going to see more and more from a trend standpoint. CEOs are going to say, you know what? We're just not going to do that. You have the right. I want to create an environment, a culture within our organization where you can voice your opinion on social justice issues. But we are not going to engage in that because we have a product, a service, a business to run. And my job is to create a great workplace for you.
Well, this is something I've just been thinking about lately, is we talk about equity, and equity in many cases relates to fairness, which relates to justice.
So this issue of justice and equity, and there are all sorts of terms that we've ended up, they're conflating into this fundamental sense of fairness. And organizations are wrestling with this issue. Even the distinction between the term equal and equality and equity, right?
Right.
And that's a real issue in the workplace. Just because the employee sitting next to you makes X doesn't mean you should make X. Because equal means this is simple. They make $10 an hour, you make $10 an hour. But if that person brings a unique skill set, is more productive, is more X, then the equitable answer is different than the equal answer. Right. And that's what we are all trying to work throughout the workplace, is this nuance. These are nuanced terms that have all begun to just get conflated. And we're trying to dissect them and explain to employees that you will have equal opportunity, but your pay will be based on equity. You actually have to pause and explain that, which again goes back to employers having a responsibility to communicate very clearly some nuanced ideas that in the past we haven't really had to focus on.
And what I think is so interesting about this is that, of course, there's many aspects of work that are difficult to measure, which makes a decision of how well someone's doing their job somewhat subjective. Do you have any thoughts on how to make that more measurable?
This notion that anytime you judge talent, it's inherently a little subjective. There are rare circumstances where you can actually take a race. Someone wins in 4 seconds and someone loses in 3 seconds. You can measure them. What we've got to do as leaders is be clear with employees. This is an inexact science. It is. We're doing better as HR professionals to get a little bit more objectivity, but the employment assessment will always be subjective.
And what are you seeing now from your vantage point around what's really changing in the role of HR?
Yeah, so the world of HR, remember, there's this evolution. HR for years was known as personnel, and personnel was very transactional. Pay me, make sure my benefits work, you know, those very transactional type processes. And that still is a component of HR. But in addition to the more personnel functions, there are now these higher level. We need to literally develop people as leaders. We've got to reskill a workforce. Now, we know that 5 years from now, many estimate 70, 80% of the jobs that exist right now won't exist or will be so different that you have really got to reskill yourself every 5 to 7 years. And that requires that HR, if you want to hold on to employees, if you think about the employee life cycle, you've really got to be focused now on learning and development for all of your employees to make sure that they have shelf life after 5 years. The other thing that HR is really doing is helping organizations get really clear about culture. We are increasingly the nurturers, the keepers of culture. Now HR is being asked by leadership to say, if this is what it means to work here, we've got to make sure that that transcends throughout the organization. And when you say culture, that impacts pay, that impacts promotions, that impacts all of that. But we have really taken on a much more strategic role because organizations in a knowledge-based economy, no, you've got to find and keep the best talent.
So as we think about the concept of leaders really being able to let go and lead, what do you believe they need to let go of?
A couple of things. One, their preconceived notions of the way the world works. Because however it worked 10 years ago, it likely doesn't work now. In fact, post-pandemic, whatever your worldview was, your assessment of how things got done pre-pandemic just a year ago has changed. So you've got to let that go as a leader. And that is hard because think about it. You are a leader because you have been successful. And by definition, if you've been successful, then you don't have a real reason to change direction. It has worked in the past for you. So I encourage leaders a lot to really revisit where we are now and let go any of the preconceived notions you have about how people think, how they operate, what they want. Everything has changed and the pandemic accelerated that change.
So now I'd like to ask you about your White House experience. I notice you've been on several commissions or advisory boards. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what it's been like?
Oh man, fascinating. So it's important to know earlier in my life, I was very active in politics, worked for Janet Reno. And then fast forward, I worked with Hillary Clinton. I was a big bundler in her first presidential campaign. And then all of a sudden in 2017, I get a call from the Trump administration. This is not something I applied for or even thought that I was being considered for because I was not a registered Republican. Literally, I was sitting in my office and I got a call that I needed to come to the White House. Luckily, I was dressed in a suit that day. So I rush over to the White House and I walk into a room and the President of the United States. And listen, no matter what your political persuasion is, this is the most powerful person on the planet.
Of course.
And you walk in into the Oval Office, the enormity of it all settles in. And he said, I understand you have a commitment to our country. You're a patriot. I understand you have a passion for historically black colleges and universities. He said, but I like the way you think about this. You come from industry. You know, ultimately, the importance of higher educational institutions providing the workplace of the future. And I'd like you to advise me on that. I'd like you to oversee the committee, the board that will advise me on this. And so I said, sure. And I had the great fortune of serving our country. And so we spent the next 3 or so years really doing some work that needed to be done for historically black colleges. Well, midway in this process, I get a call from then the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, who said, we're now going to really focus on the future of work so that we ensure that every person has the opportunity to experience the American dream. So that was my second big assignment. And I spent the time doing both for the better part of the last administration. It was phenomenal.
And what an incredible honor.
It was, yeah.
So Jenny, you're also, on top of everything else you're doing, a weekly columnist for USA Today called Ask HR.
Yes.
What are you seeing as the most prevalent questions that you're getting?
So it's fascinating that we hear it. People don't understand workplace policy. Number one is people don't understand the idea of employment at will, that they can be fired at any time or they can leave at any time as long as it doesn't violate the federal law. The second thing is there's this major disconnect between what employees think employers are thinking about. I'm amazed at the letters that I get where people are saying, I'm afraid to complete this employee survey because my employer sent it out. What they're really doing is surveilling me. And you're like, no, they have no idea what you're saying. They don't want to know what you're saying because frankly, there's some legal challenges and problems with them knowing. So it's really fascinating to see this major disconnect. Americans spend about a third of their life at work. Can you imagine being in a relationship for a third of your life? I mean, 8-10 hours a day, and you don't really understand what the other side of the equation thinks. And then the final one, we see a lot of questions, a lot, which came as a surprise to me. A lot of the issues, employees actually disagree fundamentally with each other. What am I going with that? So I do a lot of work, and SHRM is a big supporter of getting talent back to work, which is a second chance initiative. We also do a lot of work on employing people with disabilities or employing abilities at work. You would be surprised how much discrimination actually comes from employees toward other employees. Employees say, sure, I love the idea of second chance as long as they don't work here. Sure, I believe that disabled or differently abled people should have job opportunities, but they slow me up. So it's amazing the questions that I get in the Ask HR column where employees, they say one thing and literally feel very differently when you're asking them. It's absolutely fascinating.
That is interesting. And has it given you any insights on what leaders could be doing differently?
Yeah, communication. It really has underscored for me how much we think employees understand the business that we're in, how much employees understand our individual company cultures, and how much they don't. And somehow, we as leaders are doing a horrible job of communicating who we are as an organization and how we operate. And I'm like, there's such an opportunity. If you don't know this, then your employer is failing at communicating.
So, Johnny, you're obviously one of the most influential Black executives in the country. And what can you share with us about being Black and being an executive?
Wow. So I'm not a Black executive. I'm an executive. I am Black. I'm a man, I'm a father, I'm a son. Like there are so many other characteristics that define me. And so the struggle is when people try to define me as a Black executive. And that frankly is one of the core problems. It's like there's this idea of what I should think, how I should think, and how I should experience work. That being said, what I will say is that I have had a phenomenal experience coming up the corporate ladder. All of those experiences were not positive. There were times along this journey where I understood and had to parse whether someone didn't like me because I was Black or if they didn't like me because they just didn't like me.
Right.
Right?
I've had that as a woman too.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what I started to do and really what helped me, two things I'm going to share with you. One, I think everyone wants to win. I think ultimately, yes, there are bigots and there are people who will make decisions based upon race, gender, age, disability. I mean, I got that. But at the end of the day, most organizations want to win. So they want the person who can help make them be successful. And if you go in believing that and making that, then what you do is you become indispensable to your organization and then success is going to be yours. That's number one. It is really critical for your mindset to be one, not of deficit thinking, but what do I add to any organization such that I'm indispensable? The other thing that my grandmother told me growing up, she said something that I keep with me in my entire life. What someone else thinks about me is none of my business. And that really has helped me as a Black executive coming up through corporate America is I've got to do what I do really, really well. But if you allow people's impression of you to dictate how you see yourself and how you show up, then you fail and they win. So as a Black executive, I've had an amazing experience. I mean, I am the American dream. Neither of my parents are college educated. In fact, my parents didn't finish high school. And to think that I've had and enjoyed the success and the quality of life that I have is unbelievable. I have a very, very optimistic worldview of my life. I love being an executive. I love being Black. I love being a dad. I love being all of these things. And so that's how I see the world.
Well, your joy and passion comes through in everything you do. And I'm just so grateful to have had you as a guest. Thank you so much for this.
Well, thank you. The pleasure's been mine.
I love the way Johnny connects very broad shifts in our society to the experiences we have inside our own organizations. Let's recap a few key learnings. For starters, the HR function has evolved into a strategic thought partner for leadership. HR today plays a key role in training and developing the entire workforce for new jobs to keep pace with our changing world. They also ensure that the organization's culture and employee experience are aligned to deliver on the company's external-facing brand. Second, we learned that SHRM and its 300,000 members worldwide is seeing several key trends every leader should keep in mind. Trend one, the five-day in-office work week is quickly going the way of the past. It's being replaced by a hybrid model of remote and on-site days. Trend two, more and more employees say they want to feel fulfilled in their work. They want to work for a purpose, to be clear about that purpose, and to be aligned with the mission of the organization and their role. Trend three, employee activism is here to stay, SHRM has found. Employers should expect questions that employees raise publicly about the organization's values. Questions that might impact a business's offerings or relationships. Trend four, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Looking at the K-12 demographics of this country, it's clear that our future workforce is going to be more diverse. And as a result, Johnny says, we must focus on inclusion and equity to be ready not only for current employees, but our future colleagues as well. Third, leaders must design a culture that is a true articulation of what it means to work in their organization. As you work toward an ideal culture, make sure it's rooted in the ways work actually gets done in your company. Codifying your culture is an extensive process that requires input from the entire leadership team, as well as employee testing to make sure the resulting work resonates. That process can lead to your employee value proposition, or your EVP. Fourth, communication begets accountability. When you share the employee value proposition, Johnny says, what you are really communicating is that you can hold each other accountable for what happens inside your organization. Lastly, Johnny reminded us to let go of our preconceived notions of how the world works, because the world has changed. This ask might be hard for leaders, but we owe it to ourselves to re-examine our worldview. Thanks again, Johnny, for this truly dynamic conversation, and thanks to all our listeners. Until next time, this is Let Go and Lead.